Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. With 4th of July weekend just ahead and Pride celebrations ongoing, it is the season for summer parties, and a lot of that partying involves alcohol. That can be difficult if you've quit drinking. Our topic today, sobriety in the summertime. If you're in recovery, how has that changed the way you connect with people? What can friends and family do to support their sober loved ones? We want to hear from you this hour. Email letstalk@kunm.org, or you can call in live during the show this morning. It's 277-5866, or if you're outside of the Albuquerque area, 1-877-899-5866. We're also streaming online, KUNM.org. I want to welcome in the studio this morning Lazarus Letcher, a trans activist and artist and PhD student in American Studies at UNM. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for being here. And Antonia Montoya, a health educator who's studying to become a therapist.
Yep.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, both of you. Today's show is the start of a mini series here at KUNM on addiction and recovery. So later this summer, we'll get into more topics, including medication-assisted treatment, the state of our behavioral health system. That's a big one. But we'll start today with just hearing some personal recovery stories. So again, we'd love to hear from you. Call 277-5866. And let's start with just sort of a round table here. So Antonia, Laz, would you please share how long you've been sober, what you're abstaining from, and I'll ask you to share just one thing you did related to your recovery this week. Antonia, would you mind going first?
Sure, I'd love to. So I am 5+ years. It was 5 years in March. And
congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. And that has been, you know, it's 5 years, so it feels like it's pretty sustained at this point, but it's still a ride, you know, up and down and struggling times and not. And I abstain from alcohol. And I forgot what else you asked. This week.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess.
Kind of icebreaker style here.
Yeah, right? I guess the big one is my gratitude practice, writing down what I'm grateful for every day. But also another one that I've started in the last couple years is exercise, which seems to really help just moving my body and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
All right. And I want to ask you more about that gratitude practice in a minute. But Lazarus, would you share about your sobriety and then what's one thing you did related to it this week?
Yeah, totally. So the start of Pride Month was 18 months for me, which is always a fun way to celebrate.
Yeah.
So let's see. One thing I did this week, I do a lot of online recovery meetings because of my schedule. So went for a bosque walk with my dog and tuned into a recovery meeting with folks from all over the world. And yesterday I also picked up some Narcan so I can show up for my community. Helping others is one of the best things that helps me maintain sobriety.
And Narcan, again, is what? Just briefly.
Yeah. So Narcan can reverse opioid overdoses. It's a nasal spray. You can get it for free at the MATS Center in town. That's on Zuni. And you can get 2 free doses. It's important to know that some instances, one dose isn't enough, especially if fentanyl is involved, which I think has been the case in some overdoses here in town.
Thanks for sharing that. And I want to mention also that we have posted a list of resources on our website, KUNM.org. We'll add the MATS Center after the show. So thanks for mentioning that. I want to welcome also to the show this morning on the line from Los Lunas, Yvette Romero, a peer educator there. Yvette, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And I want to put the same starting questions to you. How long have you been in recovery? What did you quit? And what's one thing related to your recovery that you did this week?
Okay, so I have been in recovery a little over 2 years. And I was a poly user, but this last demon that I'm fighting was heroin. And one thing I did for recovery this week is I gardened. I got into gardening, and that has really, it's a meditation all on its own. And I get, as I'm growing, so are my plants and so are the tomatoes and flowers. And
Amazing. So I'm hearing a theme of like plants and nature. You said you went to the bosque as well, Les. Thanks so much for being on the show, Yvette. And again, if you've quit drinking or using drugs, we want to hear from you this morning. What works for you? Who or what do you lean on in your recovery? Give us a call, 277-5866. So recovery, not a one-size-fits-all proposition, of course. Antonio, would you share a bit more about what works for you in your recovery? You mentioned your gratitude practice. Will you share more about that?
Yeah, that's actually something that I had started before. I quit drinking, which is interesting. A lot of people start gratitude practices in recovery. And so it was kind of nice to have that already established for me. But I find it so helpful to just get out of the bleakness and the hopelessness that can come with a really big identity changing life change. So yeah, that is something for me. And just really simply what I do is I write three things every night before I go to sleep that I'm grateful for, but I try to not be so rigid with it. Sometimes I'll just write one thing. A lot of times it's a lot more than three. So yeah, that's what I do. And it's been really helpful.
And you've also been to like a mix of groups and stuff as well.
Yeah.
Can you tell about that?
Kind of an interesting, so I've gotten some benefit from 12-step, but it's not in the more traditional way of like going to AA. Although I have done AA a little, my really big thing that has helped me is CODA, which is Codependence Anonymous. And it, because my alcohol, part of the reason I stayed drinking as long as I did was because I was kind of comparing myself to other people, like surrounding myself with people that were less functional or drank more than me and were having more issues with it. And I'd always say, oh, I'm okay, 'cause I'm not as bad as, you know, this or that or the other. And, doing CODA really helped me. Like the first step in CODA, all the 12 steps kind of have the same steps, but the distinction in CODA is instead of your life being powerless over alcohol, it's powerless over others. And that was a really interesting, really working the steps with CODA really helped me to focus on myself and really notice what was working for me and what wasn't. And so that is something, you know, I kind of drift in and out of going to CODA meetings when I need it. And the main thing that I do is seeing one-on-one therapy, like working with my therapist. So that's kind of a part of my mix.
Gotcha. Are there certain times, like do you have a regular appointment with your therapist or do you just sort of call?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the regular thing I do. I see my therapist at this point. It's every other week, which is nice. But I'll go more if I need to. And yeah, I have a standing appointment that I don't miss. Like that's really important for me. I had a little bit of a struggle, ironically, because I started working in the recovery field and it started to really challenge my own recovery, which seems like, I mean, it sounds weird when you say that, but it was the case for me. And I've heard that from other people as well. But anyways, after that, I really like committed to going to therapy and not missing. And it's helped tremendously to get me back on track. And I mean, I didn't relapse or anything, but it was like the early stages, like the mental relapse stuff. And I started comparing myself to others, like I said, like those little things that I knew weren't healthy for me. So, yeah.
And Lazarus, what works for you? I mean, you said you have an online recovery group right now.
Yeah, I do a few online recovery meetings. 12-step has been pretty helpful for me, and I kind of prefer the online scene because it's usually a little younger, it's usually a little more queer. I'm someone that spent a lot of time trying to pray the gay away, and for anyone with eyes and for those who are listening, it obviously did not work, which I'm very grateful for. But it's a little hard for me to go to church basements and try to change something about myself. I also participate in some Buddhist recovery systems that have helped me a lot, kind of rooted in mindfulness and a little, you know, a little more removed from the Judeo-Christian scene that, you know, even though 12 steps aren't supposed to be necessarily set in any religion, there are often meetings that I go to that end in the Lord's Prayer, which kind of rubs me the wrong way personally. So the online recovery community has been really helpful for me. I'm also in biweekly therapy, shout out to therapy. And I'm also in a recovery program that's new that's called The Tempest, which is an intersectional recovery program that's based online. They're in the process right now of trying to get covered by insurance, which is rad, but it's an 8-week program rooted in like science and mindfulness and intersectionality and understanding, you know, for those of us who are minoritized people, saying that you're powerless over something it's a little different for us. It's a little more empowering of a system that I found. So I like it.
And Lazarus, you pointed out to me when we were speaking before the show is that Alcoholics Anonymous was founded in the 1930s by two white men, and many other 12-step programs are modeled off of that. Can you say a little more about how that framework is not necessarily set up for queer folks, trans folks, and people of color, and what needs to change for 12-step programs to be more inclusive?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So a lot of the language in 12-step work is super gendered. Like one of the very first things you hear when you walk into a 12-step meeting is men and women. And as someone that identifies as non-binary trans, I'm like, oh, is this system necessarily built for me? And I think that it's, you know, 12-step programs have grown and changed and adapted with the times. Like meetings used to be segregated. That's not the case anymore. Like it took them a while to be like, gee willikers, I guess women can be alcoholics too, you know. And like they expand and they adapt with the times. And I think that being more inclusive of trans and gender nonconforming folks is the next frontier. And I don't want to use the word frontier, is the next step for 12-step programs. And that's part of the difficulty I had in early sobriety is I felt that I really needed to be in a rehab center. And that's nearly impossible for someone that is non-binary. Like even centers that advertise as LGBTQ inclusive, they often think the T is silent. And we don't have any set statistics on trans folks and addiction, but we know the numbers are very high, as they are with everyone under the LGBTQ umbrella, but particularly with trans folks who face higher levels of discrimination. Addiction is very common, and it's really hard for us to find recovery spaces that are safe.
So when you were approaching treatment centers, rehab centers, what signaled to you that they were not going to be trans inclusive, or that they would not, that wasn't necessarily going to be a safe place for you?
Yeah. So finding rehab centers in general is pretty hard because you're typically at your rock bottom and like trying to Google while you're laying in bed in like the same clothes 3 days in a row, you know, the usual. So I was already not in a good headspace, and just Google no longer allows rehabs to have paid advertisements because they would funnel you into different centers, and it's a really gross capitalistic model in a lot of places. So just trying to find a rehab center that was actually invested in healing and not making a buck off of my suffering was difficult to begin with. And then the ones that said that they're LGBTQ inclusive, like, you know, like in my chats with people, I'd be like, okay, so like I'm non-binary, what would the rooming situation be like? And it would just kind of be dead air and they'd be fumbling. And it was pretty obvious that most of the centers had no idea what I was talking about. And I don't want to go into a healing space and have to do education on top of trying to heal myself. It's rough out there.
Thanks for sharing that. That sounds difficult. And Yvette, what else is a part of your recovery? Like, what do you lean on? Yvette, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm listening. So, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, so you had told me that Casa de Salud in the South Valley was really central. I mean, what was that like going to that clinic for you?
Really refreshing. I had been basically trying this recovery thing since 2002. It was all centered around NAAA modules and, you know, this and that and abstinence and stuff like that. So in 2017, me and my husband were arrested and charged with 22 counts of armed robbery. We were not armed robbers. It was a symptom of our addiction. And when I was released from jail, I went to Casa de Salud, which me and my husband were a part of before. And so what they do there is it's Suboxone medication maintenance along with...
And that's, sorry, Suboxone is to step down and to help people get off opioids, right?
Helps with the cravings of opioids.
Mm-hmm. Sorry,
yes.
Go on.
And they do natural healing. So it's, they have these weekly healing circles. And what's involved is you have like a talking circle for the first like hour to hour and a half. And it's based on the four agreements. And then they have zero gravity chairs. They lay you back. They do what is called AccuDetox, where they place five needles in your ears and 5 points in your ears. And then there's a Reiki master there. So while the needles are in your ear, they do Reiki on you. And then at the end, they do what's called a Lipiad, which is a spiritual cleansing. And they don't really have... They urge you to, you know, they're not a religious, you know, like, they're not religious like NANA. It's whatever, you know, helps you to get through your recovery. And which I found really refreshing.
Thanks for sharing about that. And I want to ask you another question about that, but we do need to go to a quick break. I want to remind listeners, the number to call in is 277-5866. We're talking about sobriety this morning and recovery. You can also comment on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at RothsteinLaw.com. Support provided by Weekly Alibi, Albuquerque's News Weekly, and a source for local news, arts, entertainment, and culture. On stands every Thursday or at Alibi.com.
Conductor Osmo Venska says the Symphony No. 5 by Jean Sibelius is generally uplifting, but it's not all flowers and sunshine.
There's always this kind of feeling that be happy, but be aware that behind the corner there might be something bad waiting for you.
The Ominous Beauty of Sibelius on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus this morning, sobriety in the summertime. This is our first show in a series this summer on addiction and recovery. What did it take for you to decide to quit drinking or using drugs? How is your life different since you've been sober? Has anyone ever thrown you a special sober celebration? What was that like? If you have experience with the 12-step program, what's useful about that to you? Give us a call this morning, 277-5866, or you can email letstalk@kunm.org. We've got some great guests in the studio here and on the line. I want to go to a listener call right now. Chris is on the line in Albuquerque. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
What would you like to add, or what's your comment or question?
I have a question for Lazarus, and I have a family member who is... He's 1 year sober now.
Oh, that's great.
And I think that's fabulous. He had 3 attempts at sobriety before he's went through counseling programs and is committed. He's remote. He works in a rural location in a ranch in central New Mexico, and he's about 2 hours from the closest possible support group meeting. So I was interested in knowing more about online support groups and wanted to ask if the call-in show would, or the Let's Talk New Mexico would, post those resources to the website after the show.
Absolutely, we will. And Lazarus, yeah, share more about that.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that question. And that's one of the things that makes these online groups amazing. The ones I do are usually over the system called Zoom. So you can go online and do them and be face-to-face, or you can call in from a cell phone anywhere in the world. I'll be sure to share those with Hannah after the show. But if I believe the website is 12-Step Online Intergroup, and you can see like a range of different groups that meet online. There's also a website that's called, it's www.intherooms.com, I believe, and that has a bunch of recovery 12-step programs, like with like a wide range from like Self-Harmers Anonymous to AA. And then the other program that I do is Refuge Recovery, which is a Buddhist-based program, and those also have daily online meditation groups and meetings and book discussions. So there's quite a few options, which is rad.
And those online platforms for someone who's never used like Zoom or even Skype or something like that, I mean, how are you getting that, like, how are you getting that connection and that like sharing in a way, in a similar way that you would like sitting in a circle with people?
Yeah.
Like, how does it feel?
It's a really good question. I was a little worried about that at first. I was like, does this really count as a meeting if I'm not like sitting in a circle with others? But my heart still feels that connection. And for me, like I have pretty gnarly anxiety at times, and it can be hard for me to go to an in-person meeting. So it can be really nice to like be in bed with my dog and like be in a meeting with a bunch of people from Finland in the middle of the day. Like I still get that sense of connection. I still get the healing that I do from in-person meetings, and it fits my lifestyle a little easier some days.
Are they seeing your face on video? Or are you seeing their face?
Yes. Most of the meetings I do are face to face, which is cute because everyone usually has their pets like coming in and out of the frame, which I personally love. And then some of them too are just audio only. And those are nice. I kind of, you know, I'll go for walks and kind of listen to them like a podcast, and I can still like turn on my mic and chime in. But it's really nice for me. I have a lot of difficulty sitting still, so that works great for me.
I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with that. thanks, Lazarus. And thanks for that question, Chris. Thanks for calling in. I hope your son, I believe it was, can check that out. And Yvette, I wanted to ask you more about your work through Casa de Salud. You helped facilitate a workshop last weekend about the roots of addiction. Yvette Romero on the line from Los Lunas. I should do that introduction again. So this workshop last weekend that you helped with was partly looking at the way the history of New Mexico, so colonialism, structural racism, the way those things have led to addiction. And I wanted to ask you, what have you learned about your own family history that now informs like how you think about your addiction in the present day?
Okay, so my grandmother on my father's side would tell me stories about my great-grandfather, which was her great, well, it would be my great-great-grandfather, and how because he couldn't pay his taxes, his land was taken away. And, you know, land loss is a big thing in New Mexico, and that's, you know, that's what starts, you know, people, natives of New Mexico are used to working their land, you know, growing their own food. And when that was taken away, it was like his identity was taken away as well. And it just facilitating those workshops helped me to realize that. And yes, I do come from a long line of alcoholics and, you know, addictions. And that I like would have never realized, would have never thought that far back, like, what, you know, the root causes of my addiction today.
And how does that inform the way you, like, for example, communicate with your own kids about addiction or about substance use, Yvette?
Excuse me? How does that, what? Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, sure. How do you communicate with your own kids about substance use and about addiction? I mean, what's important for them to understand about your family history with it or about your own experience with it?
Honesty, just complete honesty. I'm grateful that I don't have that problem with my children. And maybe that's because they've seen me and their father, you know, dealing with our addictions and our recovery. And, but as far as I've always been honest with them. And so it's helped.
Let's go to a listener call. AJ is on the line from Santa Fe. AJ, what would you like to add this morning?
Well, First of all, I'd like to add that I think you folks are providing, all of you, people on air and of course, the station itself are providing a terrific service here. So my first comment is that I'm grateful to you for doing this because I think these kinds of discussions and messages need to get out further, even if it gets to one person. It's gone a significant distance. The reason I called in is I was listening and caught this as I was passing through stations, and I thought, well, I'm hearing things that I'm familiar with. I have been in recovery for 14 years. I have used physical practice to aid the 12-step practice. 12-step for me has revolved and now revolves around something called ACOA, which is Adult Children of Alcoholics, and Al-Anon to an extent, and really any practice in a group that's 12-step driven. And then on top of that, I added what I think one of your other, or several of your other presenters this morning have talked about, which is meditation practice. It took me a while to get to that because there's a lot of quiet that needs to descend on a person like me before you get to meditative practice. So I needed physical gates to get there. So yoga helped. It took me, a while to become less stiff than a board. And then to understand that yoga is not simply what yoga practitioners call asanas or postures or tight clothes. Yoga is a ethical practice and an embodied spiritual practice. And then I needed to get to the quieter mind of recovery, it helps to do things. So I do a lot of walking in the woods and mountains, which I was already doing, but with a slightly different sensibility, less urgent and more present. And that took a while to develop. Then I found a sport I liked. It was just hard enough to keep me in a state of constant vulnerability. And that's tennis. And tennis has a movement meditation piece to it, which is the focus on the little green object that's flying around. And if you can do that at high speed, for me, the way I look at it is I want to stay completely mindful and unstressed, focused, yet vulnerable at very high speeds.
And AJ, sorry, let me pause you to ask a follow-up here. Why do you think it's important to have those embodied practice and be present in your body? Like, why is that presence in your physicality important to sobriety? I mean, what's the connection?
Well, for me, there are a lot of reasons, but one is if in these focus practices that are dealing with quieting the mind, then one of the things that occurs over time and it develops and it develops and it develops is the quiet anxiety that underlies any of what I would call the uses or abuses of substances calms. And indeed, the body clears itself, if you will. I mean, your body is not asking in its original state for cocaine or marijuana or heroin. These are not things I'm particularly used to. I've used alcohol, but I use 12-step to take alcohol out of my life you take out the alcohol for the privilege of understanding what's actually really wrong. And then when you get to that phase, then there's a calming or clearing that's helpful to do. And that's where these physical practices come in.
All right. AJ, thank you so much for that call. I appreciate your perspective this morning. And Antonia, that conversation was reminding me of something that you and I were talking about, which is that getting out of your head, getting out of comparing to other people. I mean, What like fears or internal things have you had to work through in your recovery that you maybe didn't expect when you were just, you know, thinking, I'm just going to stop drinking?
Yeah, there was a lot of layers there. I resonated a lot with that last caller and what they were talking about, because I felt like there was the comparing myself to others thing that was keeping me from stopping drinking. And then once I did stop drinking, I totally resonate with what he said about that once the alcohol wasn't there, all the other stuff, kind of garbage stuff that I was kind of numbing away came out. And so a lot of like opportunity, that's a positive way to say that, opportunity to work on things and to increase that self-awareness. And then with working with that, then that quiet that he was talking about emerges, and that brought out a lot of anxiety for me. And so there were so many layers there. And for me in my recovery, what was interesting is different things helped me at different phases to kind of get through whatever I was dealing with at that time. And so I think, like I was saying before, therapy has helped me a lot more now, whereas groups helped me a lot more before. And I think part of it had to do with those different like layers of where I was and what I was needing. And that it's can be scary, or I felt very overwhelmed by emotion. Like, I didn't realize how much I was numbing my emotion. I thought I was really self-aware and had good emotional intelligence. I had this whole perception of myself, and a lot of stuff came back. Like, I felt like I was 13 again, which is when I started drinking, which happens to a lot of people. But I felt like I was 13 again with insecurities and anxiety and a lot of emotion that emerged for me in early recovery. So it's been quite a ride.
And Yvette, is that, what do you think about that idea of needing different practices at different points throughout your recovery? Does that, how does that relate to your experience, Yvette?
It hit it right on the head, because I'm along with her. I've used a lot of different approaches to my recovery. And like she was saying, there's a calm. And when you're in your active addiction, you get addicted to the drama. You're like, what do I do now? There's no drama. And it's so uncomfortable. You're uncomfortable in your own skin. And as far as like I've tried the church thing. I attend NAAA meetings. I do the individual counseling as well. I do my healing circles. I do, what else? And like she said, different things work at different times. And like she hit it right on the head.
Are there other ways you've found to fill that time that you're not filling with, like you said, the drama or all the activity that went along with using? I mean, what are different ways you're filling your time now?
Okay, so like I mentioned the gardening at first. And then I got a pet fish named Bubbles. And just coloring even. I mean, like she said, you feel like you're growing, you're a kid again, and which is when I started, was really young as well. And let's see, dancing, like nobody's watching. And that just being with, surrounding myself with supportive and positive people. And that has really helped.
Have you found you've had to change the way you interact with friends and family since getting clean? Or are there people that you like can't interact with as much anymore? Has that been difficult?
Yes, very. And see, I'm still in early recovery. You know, 2 years is still early recovery. But at first, I could not be around drinking. I could not be around people that use. It took one bad day. I don't know if you guys heard that saying, you hang around a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. Kind of like that. And I just, now I'm the designated driver for my brother and my sister-in-law. And I went, it was about 2 weeks ago, I went to a graduation party. And I was able to, I didn't crave it. I didn't, you know, I didn't even want to take a drink. I had so much fun. I was able to dance without alcohol and remember everything. So, I mean, I don't plan on going to graduation parties every weekend, but I'm able to be around them now. And as far as, like, people that I used to use with, I see them at the store, and they don't even recognize me.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's a blessing in disguise. But I do work. I'm currently working on being a peer support worker. And I have to work with people that are different stage of their addiction and their recovery. So, I mean, it's made it a lot easier.
Thank you for doing that work.
Yeah.
All right. And we do need to go to a quick break again. The number to call in is 277-5866. We would love to hear your stories of recovery this morning. You can also tweet the hashtag Let's Talk NM. Again, that number 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
Bluesman Murray Porter from the Mohawk Nation is charged up with a velvet growl, and we'll hear it on our June Music Maker. Here's what he's belting out on his stand-up album. Tune in to the next Native America Calling to hear more.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
If you have a member of the family who isn't driving anymore, encourage them to donate their vehicle to KUNM. We'll arrange for towing the car. Even if they don't live in New Mexico, we can arrange for pickup anywhere in the country. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. We make it easy to donate a car or truck, even from a distance. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. Good morning. I'm Hannah Colton. This morning we're talking about sobriety, and it's the first in a series of shows this summer that we'll be putting on about addiction and recovery. If you've quit drinking or using drugs, what works for you? How is recovery different for people at different ages, different stages of life? What do you need in the moments when you're struggling to be able to maintain your sobriety? We want to hear from you this morning. You can join the conversation by calling 277-5866. And we do have Laureen on the line from Albuquerque. Thanks so much for calling, Laureen. What would you like to add?
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to share something that I learned about. They're opening what people are calling sober bars on the East Coast and the West Coast, and I wanted to let people know about that. I think it's a really positive trend. Personally, I was never addicted to anything, but because of my involvement in the yoga and meditation community, I don't use any kind of recreational drugs. So I do think it's important for people to have places to go and socialize without the alcohol or the other drugs. And to feel good and to build community.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. Thanks for calling, Laureen. And Lazarus Letcher, a PhD student at UNM in American Studies here and a trans activist and artist. Lazarus, you helped organize a sober party during Pride this month. Would you tell us about that? Why was that important for you to do?
Yes, I'm really grateful. I work at Self-Serve Toys here in town, and it was an idea that my boss pitched, and we were all just definitely on board. And I think we might have been the only all-ages event that happened the night of Pride. As a member of the LGBTQ community, I think I can count on one hand, and I don't even need all the fingers, the brick-and-mortar queer establishments that I've been in that aren't bars. gets a very huge part of our scene, and we do suffer higher rates of addiction. And I don't think that those two facts are unrelated. And it was just really lovely. And like one of the beautiful things about sober spaces, besides them being more accessible to folks in recovery, they're great for folks too who have trauma around addiction. Like I believe it's 70 to 80% of physical and sexual attacks involve alcohol. And a lot of folks, even just the smell or the sight of it can be a trigger. These spaces can also be, you know, all ages, which is rad. Like it was really cool to see 8-year-olds in their like rainbow outfits dancing their little hearts out. Like it's really beautiful to have these spaces, especially for LGBTQ youth, and having them sober spaces makes these spaces so much more accessible, not just for folks in recovery.
That's a great point that more people than just people who are specifically sober can really benefit from those spaces. And you mentioned alcohol and drugs being triggering for all sorts of people who've experienced trauma and other things. Can you say more about why alcohol in particular is such a double-edged sword for the queer community, like historically?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like I said, like bars are a big backbone of the community. And I think there has been a lot of good that's come out of having these community centers, having places where people can be themselves and meet folks like them. And a lot of times I think alcohol is used also to kind of like take the edge off and to try to become more comfortable with yourself, which is definitely one of the things that drove my use, especially as a trans person. Like not all trans people live or suffer from gender dysphoria, but I definitely was one of those. And alcohol was a great way to separate my mind from my body, from my spirit, and just kind of like float throughout my existence. And I think that for a lot of LGBTQ folks, they're in a similar boat where they might not feel entirely comfortable, and alcohol can, you know, help soften the edges of a system in a society that's not necessarily built for you.
And you have mentioned that being sober and not and being able to not numb out like really supports your goals and your work as an artist, as an activist. Why is that? I mean, how do you view your sobriety through in your work?
Yeah, so I definitely was a strong believer like in the suffering artist modality. I was like, to create, I must suffer. And, you know, when I was working on my master's thesis, I would go to a brewery every day thinking I was like, you know, a black trans Hemingway. And I just like, you know, pages never got written. I just really wedded my creativity to my use and was really fearful that once I got sober, like I would forget how to play the viola, which I've played for over 20 years. And like that first show I did sober was terrifying. Like I think it was the first time I'd been on a stage in over a decade sober. And was surprised and was like, oh wow, I still know how to play this thing. And oh wow, I can remember the show. This is a nice sensation. And, you know, being able to actually sit down and finish a song. And for me, like I never really hit a rock bottom. And I thought that's what was necessary to get sober. Like you had to hit a rock bottom. You had to lose everything in your life. And once everything was gone, then like you can rebuild a sober life. And for me, I was just stuck in every arena of my life. Like I was still in school. I was still in a band. I was still, you know, on paper, pretty successful, but I was suffering and I wasn't moving forward in any regard. And, you know, once I sat down and took a look at it, I was like, maybe this drinking every day starting at 3 thing might be impacting my productivity. And once I got sober, my days suddenly got like 3 times as long to the point where I was like, what do you do with yourself?
Well, we do have another listener call. Anna is on the line from Santa Fe. Anna, thanks for calling in. What did you want to add?
Good morning. I'm a sober woman here in Santa Fe, thankfully. And I appreciate your show a lot. I wanted to just offer 2 things. One is a strategy for when you're going to a party and there's using at the party, maybe it's a family 4th of July gathering, 3 ways to stay sober and handle it. One is make sure you have a way to get out of there, either drive yourself or have money for a Uber, something like that, so you can leave if you need to. Another is find the kids at the party. Play with the kids. They're going to be sober. A third thing is to be of service instead of drinking or fixating on those that are, you know, go around, pick up some cups, help out in some way. And that really helps. The other thing I wanted to add was something I've learned. I go to AA, and I also go to Refuge Recovery for meditation and love my sober communities. And one thing I've learned there, when you're having a bad day, it's good to get out of yourself. And one way to do that is to find a way to be of service to someone and don't tell anyone about it. Do a good deed and don't tell anyone about it. So I just wanted to share those tips and thank you for having a show on sobriety.
Those are great pieces of advice. Thanks for calling, Anna.
You're welcome.
Appreciate Bye. It. And alcohol is so embedded in our culture, right? There's after work events, happy hours, there's art and music shows are often at bars, usually at bars, even family gatherings, like Anna said. And if everyone around you is drinking, it could be difficult to identify, like you were saying earlier, Antonia, like, is my drinking really that bad? Or that person seems to be worse off, so I don't need to quit. Antonia, I was going to ask you, what was that turning point for you? I mean, Lazarus was sharing that they didn't really have like a rock bottom.
I have a similar experience actually with that. I mean, I think I did have a rock bottom, but it was like 4 years before I stopped, 5 years before I stopped. So I guess I kind of, that was another kind of justification of why I kind of kept drinking, as I was like, oh, well, things have gotten better since that one place, so I'm doing good. So I also don't resonate with that narrative of rock bottom. A lot of times in 12-step circles and other areas of recovery, they basically say whenever you stopped was your rock bottom. But I think that narrative of the rock bottom can keep you still using if you're not at a low that you were previously. So yeah, I was doing a lot better than I was when I had that rock bottom, probably, I guess at this point was like 11 years ago. But for me, it was just, well, I mean, I did have a regrettable day that kind of started the trajectory forward, which was not, I don't really necessarily want to go into right now, but it definitely, like I said, I had already been practicing gratitude, and it really stuck out for me because I did a gratitude reflection that I actually lead with other people now. And it was like an end of year gratitude reflection. And I answered all these questions about things I was grateful for throughout the year. But one of the questions I asked myself was, what's one thing you weren't grateful for this year? And that one regrettable experience came up, and it allowed me to really reflect and say, like, oh yeah, this is a lot of things related to my drinking are the parts of my life that aren't working and that I'm not grateful for, that aren't going well. And so that frame of gratitude allowed me to actually see myself with eyes wide open and notice what wasn't working and inspire a change. So that was a big piece of my story in the early days.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And Genevieve is on the line from Bernalillo. Good morning, Genevieve. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. So I wanted to share, I struggled on and off with harder drugs because of pain management. And what really helped me was the programs. And then once I was honest with my family, I lost a lot of trust. They were disappointed. But once I was honest with them, they were able to help me and get me into a program where medication helped. I know I'm still powerless over it 3 years later, but I wish there was more programs for people, because sometimes there's waiting lists and they can't get in, or they feel like they can't tell their family, or they don't have family. So I think having somebody to trust to tell, that's the one step that got me more sober, was being honest that I was a drug addict.
And New Mexico really has lost a lot of behavioral health treatment centers since a shakeup in the system in 2013. how did you find that program that worked for you? And what, I mean, if you want to shout out what the program was, or just say, you know, what about it was supportive to you?
So it was a methadone clinic here in Albuquerque. You can pay and literally get your methadone the same week, as opposed to some of them, if you can't pay, you have to wait months, you know, or you have to be there first thing. Or, I mean, it's a lot of work, but it was $65 to get the heroin treatment. I got my methadone for a week at the, there off of Montaño for $65. And for the month, you know, and I didn't have to worry about, oh, I'm going to have to go to school, I'm going to be sick. Well, I mean, and a family member paid for it for me after I told them what was going on.
Genevieve, what would you say? You said being honest with your family was so important. What would you just say to someone who is just in that space where they know they need to tell someone or reach out, but they're just like scared and it just feels bad? Like, what would you say to that person? What would your advice be?
Start by telling a friend, somebody that you know, and then work up to the people that you know you need to tell the most. It's going to be scary, but they probably already know. So being honest is how you're going to be honest with yourself to get sober. So I think it's slowly working up to it, to telling them.
Gotcha. And one more question for you, Genevieve, how do you feel your time now differently that you've been in recovery for a little bit?
Oh, it's amazing. I'm so happy. I would say like, using heroin was like living in the dark world where there's no sunshine. You're always in pain. You're not happy. There's no, you can't see the next day. You can only see the next hour, the next minute. Now I can plan for a couple of months in advance. I don't have to worry about going out of town because that was another problem. If I went out of town, I didn't have enough. I just, I've been on family vacations where I had to leave suddenly because I didn't have enough of my stuff. Now I can go on vacations. I'm planning things. I'm buying things. I don't have everything in the pawn shop. I still don't have a lot of trust 3 years later with my family, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
All right. Genevieve, thanks so much for sharing and calling in this morning. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you so much.
Thanks. And we got an email from Scott who says there's a meeting guide app that shows you all the AA meetings close to you. So thanks for that message, Scott, and we'll get that resource on our website, kunm.org, as well. We've got just about a minute left. Yvette, the last question is for you. What is the best thing a person looking to change the behaviors can do first? What would a good first step be? What would your advice be?
Seek help. Seek help wherever anybody would. Everybody's different, and every as you can see from all of us, and I think wherever. Help is going to, whatever help you need. If you need Suboxone maintenance, if you need meetings, if you need, you know, housing, if you need just a first step would just be asking for help, asking for help.
All right. Thanks for that. And we are out of time for the hour. Thank you so much to our guests, Yvette Romero, Antonia Montoya, Lazarus Letcher, and thank you to everyone who called in today and who commented. Today's show is the first in a series about addiction and recovery. We'll be digging more into these things over the summer. If you're in recovery, we'd love to hear about your experience. Comment on our Facebook page, talk to us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email us letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen on kunm.org. The web post will be there. Or subscribe to our podcast, Let's Talk New Mexico, via iTunes. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Bryce Dix screened your calls. Marisa DeMarco gave editorial support. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. She also live tweeted the show today.
I'm your host, Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.